doing this work allows me to share the pure love of Jesus Christ coming into the world to show us how to break down all the barriers, how God loves and moves through the world. And so it really expands my understanding of what Christianity is to be able to include and work with others from other faiths.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Have you ever wondered how you can be a peacemaker? It's a call lots of us feel today when we see violence increasing in communities and in our nation. Our guest today offers us some very simple advice on how to make peace with our neighbors and friends. The Reverend Patricia Matthews is an Episcopal priest in Little Rock, Arkansas, currently serving as director of the Interfaith Center since 2023. She's someone who's worked to reduce fear between religious traditions throughout her career, and she was recently a presenter at the BYU Religious Freedom Review.
I was raised a Southern Baptist and loved that tradition. It taught me so much about the Bible and about putting God first in my life. But when I hit college, that tradition didn't work for me anymore. So I spent 10 years reading all the different religions of the world to find out what people believed, what the common thread was. And then I found the Episcopal Church that let me have my stories from the Christian tradition with this very broad theology. So I think those 10 years of wandering around by myself in the world of theology prepared me to do this work.
Well, there is a biblical precedent for the wandering in the wilderness a little bit, right? While you figure things out. What did you feel like during that time? Did you feel lost or did you feel like, well, God's there, I think I'm being pulled along somehow?
I think both and. One of the reasons I started working for the church is because I thought, I was out there in the wilderness all by myself for 10 years. No one should have to be by themselves. But as I would uncover little hints about God from all these different places, I definitely felt the presence of the divine with me at all times during that process.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. I think sometimes when things are in chaos, if we still have something we hold on to like that, that helps us.
I think that's right. Yeah.
I would like to ask you, because you are highly qualified to talk about this, what unique roles women play in shaping and strengthening their faith communities?
What I'll say is that I'm a member of a Christian denomination, the Episcopal Church, that allows women to be priests. And what I know that I bring to the table is I'm a mom of three. I'm a wife, so I can see that perspective. I'm a woman in the world. I'm a daughter, and I'm a sister, I'm an aunt. All of those are female roles that I get to draw on and bring to the table. So I'm good at relationships. I'm good at emotions. I'm good at pastoral care. But I'm also really good at raising money and organization. And so I mention all that because the way I would like to answer this question is to ask you this question. If I said, I think women bring a certain emotional intelligence to the table. I think we bring compassion and nurturing. Those are things that we often ascribe to women. But I would ask, how would that make a man feel to suggest that maybe you don't have those things? And so I'm hesitant to make any broad categorization about what women can bring to the table because we're not a monolithic, homogenous group, just like men aren't. And I think what I would rather ask is, how can we move past men and women and think about what is God calling each individual to? I was called by my community and by God to say, how can each person live most fully into who they were created to be? And does that have anything to do with being a man or a woman?
Well, that's a very insightful answer, which I appreciate. I have heard women I know say that when they constantly hear about their nurturing nature, and a few of them say, that's really not me. They say, my gifts are literally administration and organization and a few things you mentioned, that we've left off that you play the guitar, that you're a yoga instructor. And I mean, you have this whole wealth of experience.
And I bet you have a wealth of experience in nurturing and compassion if you're somebody who can listen and talk on a podcast.
I hope so. Maybe we should ask my kids, or maybe we shouldn't ask my kids. We'll find out. What made you think, I'm going to add this other layer of interfaith because now I'm going to start interacting or encouraging interaction in my community with these other congregations who have their own leaders worrying about their own problems?
I think it was because I kept running into people, right? I kept bumping into a Muslim or a Jew, and they were part of our community. And I thought that it was important as people of faith to say, who is in front of me and how can I respond with love? I think Jesus was a great interfaith worker who doesn't get credit for it. But when someone says, how can I walk with God in eternal life? He says, okay, there's a guy in a ditch. Someone from his own faith passed him by. Somebody from his own tradition passed him by. Somebody from a different faith and a different tradition that helped him out of the ditch. That's how we're supposed to walk with God. And so if I'm ignoring a whole chunk of the community because they're not Christian, then I may not be living into the gospel in the way that I believe that Jesus intended.
What difference? Because you've had time pass to actually see the effect on the community. What have you seen happen?
Well, I'll tell you a story. Most people are aware of what happened on October 7th, a couple of years ago in Israel. And that is part of a huge, long, complex situation. But here in Little Rock, it really affected my friends who are Jewish and my friends who are Muslim. They've been friends for 10 years, and it strained their friendships. But the Interfaith Center had helped resettle 16 families from Afghanistan several years before. And a Jewish congregation had sponsored one of those families, and a Muslim had been the translator. So just a few months after October 7th, this family that was sponsored by the Jewish congregation needed their Muslim translator, and so they were able to come together. And I think that kind of work is one of the places where I've seen it be so important, because those two groups of people were kind of pulling back, taking care of their own congregations, but here they had to come together to do some interfaith work. And since then, the Jewish rabbi has gone to see a Palestinian film, No Other Land, and the Muslim has gone over to the rabbi's house for a Seder meal. And so I think it's just so exciting to see those relationships. It's not perfect. Those are still hard relationships right now, but they're there and they're continuing.
Yes, yes. And world events really can pop up like the one you just described. And then here we are half the world away, and suddenly two groups who were getting along suddenly feel like, should we even be talking? You've talked about this a little, but how have you seen people be able to break down fear of other religions? Because I think that's a real thing. In fact, I sometimes wonder if we don't teach that consciously or unconsciously in our congregations, whether it's between Christians or between Muslim sects or whatever it might be, that they are the ones who have a little bit wrong. Bless their hearts.
Are you from the South?
I've met a few people.
Oh, that's so interesting to think about the fact that we actually teach fear in our own traditions. I worked down at a boarding school in Mississippi, and at that school, there were a lot of international students, and their parents came to me as the spiritual director and said, can you keep nurturing my child's faith? That was my job, not to turn them into Christians, but to walk with them on their own paths. And so I would sit with the Buddhist students in silence, and I would go to the girl who was Muslim, and I would be by her as she said her prayers. And I helped the Jewish girl from Memphis get ready for her bat mitzvah and took a group of kids up to the bat mitzvah.
Wow. And
yeah, it was really great. But I got a note in my mailbox that said I was doing the devil's work from one of my fellow teachers. And I thought, how can I respond not out of fear, right? She was obviously afraid of me and maybe these kids and their faith traditions. So I thought, if I can be kind to them, I need to be kind to her. So I offered to go sit and pray with her once a week. And just that simple act of being in the same room praying together, it didn't change either one of our minds about how we thought about our own theology, but it softened our hearts and it reduced our fear. So I think anytime we can find an opportunity just to be together and remember we're human, that is a way that we counter the narrative of fear and of the other person being bad.
As you tell that story, I'm feeling the feeling of someone accusing me of something. It's not a pleasant feeling. I get this little extra boost of energy, and it's not always to do something positive. How did you metabolize that energy into what became something good or useful?
Well, I love the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Are you familiar with it?
To make me an instrument in your hands. Yes.
Yeah. So my mom had that above our oven when I was growing up. So how do we metabolize courage? How do we get this stuff woven into us? I think we do our best to just hold up little icons of it all over the place for our kids and for our family and for ourselves. And so the part that was above our stove was, help me seek not to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it's in giving that we receive, it's in pardoning that we're pardoned, and it's in dying that we're born to eternal life. So that helped me seek not to be understood as to understand was just, it was just woven into me, I think, from a very early age.
Now, is your mother still living?
Yes.
Well, I hope she hears this because she will be proud that you were paying attention to.
Don't we hope that our kids are paying attention?
We're not always sure. It can be nice to discover they have been.
Right? Yeah. The seed we planted 50 years ago finally flourished somewhere down the line.
So. Now, one thing that's happened there in Little Rock is there is actually an interfaith center. It's a physical space. It's a house. Now, that's different than dropping by each other's house of worship now and then for a service or celebration. Why a physical space, and what do you try to accomplish there?
Well, we still do what you're talking about, which is so good. But we got the building because it's nice to have an office where people can come find us. It took the Interfaith Center from being an idea about relationships to having a grounded space. And then we're hoping it's going to become a community center where people can come and meet and have classes. And it's just a lively space. And we've had it blessed by 9 different faith leaders from 9 different traditions. And so it feels like a little holy bubble in the world. People walk in and say it feels peaceful and like they can feel God here. So it's just nice to have a place to work out of.
Oh, that's beautiful. How do you see people responding from their own faith? I assume if people pray, they can pray a Muslim prayer or a Jewish prayer or a Christian prayer, whatever they would naturally pray and to whom they would naturally pray. That seems really important.
You know, we'll have a big event and we have 4 different calls to worship. One will be a Hindu blowing a conch shell. One will be a Jew blowing a shofar, a Muslim call to worship, and a Christian call chanting, and a Buddhist bell. So it gives us the flavor of how the divine is working across the world. But I think your question gets at something interesting, which is, does it strengthen our own individual faiths to be together? One of the biggest fears I hear from people not wanting to do interfaith work is, you know, if I send my kid to an interfaith camp, their faith is going to be challenged and they might want to become another faith. And what we see is the opposite. So we have a friendship camp. My daughter's been to it. Her new best friend is Muslim, and they think it's cool now to talk about their faith with each other. And so suddenly learning about something else doesn't threaten anything. In fact, it lets you share what you believe. You get to think about what other people believe, and your faith gets strengthened.
Well, I'm picturing those 2 little girls growing up now, knowing someone of another faith, not being afraid of them, and they're probably can be back and forth with each other's homes. And I mean, just so many opportunities to not fear.
Right? So we have been to each other's homes. The whole families have gotten together. And I think my daughter will grow up, and if she sees somebody with a hijab, a headscarf on, she's not going to believe what the media tells her to believe, that this is someone who's scary or who's going to hurt her. She's going to say, oh, that's my friend's mom who made me cookies, right? Took me to get ice cream one day. And I hope the same for the other child, that they'll see me as a Christian who's open-hearted and loving, and it's not out to hurt them or even to convert them, just to love them and to care for them.
So all these people you're working with, there's this underlying assumption that there is something beyond what we can see. I mean, there are some people who are more culturally part of a faith, and that tradition is important to them. But for most, there's this underlying assumption that God is working in the world. And it just seems to me that could be that common thing that makes us kind of be okay with each other.
I think that's right. Now, just as a caveat, we do have a few atheists. We have a handful of agnostics. So we try to find language around that. And one of the ways we find language around that is that we're all on the same planet, That's another common thread. I'm going to say this planet was a creation of the divine, but you don't have to agree with me. But that we can all feel the force of nature and that we're all humans and that we're all on the same planet, trying to understand how to live together and be kind and be loving. And wouldn't it be good to draw on each other's wisdoms to learn how to do that? And then certainly for those of us who believe that God is at work in the world, it's so much fun to hear how that shows up in other cultures and in other ways, where our stories actually are really close and what we share. A lot of us share the same stories, especially in between Islam and Judaism and Christianity.
This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with Reverend Patricia Matthews. You can hear more stories about the work of religious freedom in episode 190 with leaders from the Wolf Institute at Cambridge University and episode 208 with Father Elias Kabuk and Bishop Gregory Gordon. You can find all our episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Be sure and share an episode that's meant something to you with the people in your life.
Hi, I'm Stephen Capp Perry, host of In Good Faith. In our BYU Radio family of podcasts, I've got to tell you about an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. Are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? That's what Constant Wonder does. Host Marcus Smith brings us on trips and conversations with people whose lives have been touched by the beauty of the earth and exploring its mysteries. If you crave some adventure and you want to travel the earth, but it's hard to fit into your schedule, do what I do and listen to Constant Wonder, riveting conversation with individuals whose lives have been impacted and changed by their explorations of the Earth's beauty and its mysteries. Constant Wonder, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now more from Patricia Matthews. Because you've done so much reaching out to other faiths in what you do now, when you're giving a sermon and you're in your own congregation, does it feel bigger somehow? Does it change what you do or how you think of things as you give a sermon?
I think I always had that tendency. So a while back, I was preaching and the story of Hagar came up and the Muslims trace their heritage back to her. And I called up my Muslim friend and I asked her to explain the story from her tradition. And I told the story from the Islamic point of view. And it filled out our story that we have of Sarah and Abraham. And then I started noticing that Hagar's son, Ishmael, came up several other times in the Old Testament or in the Hebrew scriptures. So I just had this lens on to notice it and to see all those connections. So it does influence my preaching. I often, when I'm trying to explain something that maybe Jesus said, Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, says it really well. And so I can bring in those examples. It is an expansion of how I see my job. So I was out at the Monastery of Christ in the Desert, which is a Catholic monastery out in the middle of the New Mexico desert. And I had been doing my job at St. Mark's for a while. And I got up at 4 a.m. to go to prayers with the monks in the middle of the desert. And I got down there about 10 minutes early and the doors were locked. So I had to sit under the sky in New Mexico. And there were millions of stars. I feel like I could see every star that had ever existed. And I heard, I need you to do this work. And I had turned down this job 3 times at the Interfaith Center over the course of a year. And I was like, I'll just do this interfaith work at my current job. And I heard laughter from God. Like, well, that's cute, but your job's really busy. You're not going to be able to do that. And I said, okay, if the job's still there when I get out, I'll take it. And I went into the chapel and there was a crucifix on the wall. And I just heard, I'm bigger than the box that the church has put me in. And so what I feel like is doing this work allows me to share the pure love of Jesus Christ coming into the world to show us how to break down all the barriers, how God loves and moves through the world. And so it really expands my understanding of what Christianity is to be able to include and work with others from other faiths. And when I got back out from the desert, the job was still available. So I took it.
you were prepared or had learned how to receive something that you felt like, and I was told this, or the thought came. How did that develop in your life? Was that something as a child or that came later, or a learning to trust whatever that was?
I think it started when I came out of those 10 years of searching for everything. I started at an Episcopal church in a little chapel with a group of Buddhists on Wednesday and a group of Episcopalians on Sunday. And both of them tended toward this quiet listening. I have practiced consciously putting myself in silence and trying to listen. Maybe that's my natural proclivity, or maybe it was my mama, or who knows, my early church, but I'm grateful for that. Whatever grace that was, sometimes it can hit us like it hit Paul, you know, blind us off the back of our horse, but also some of us can learn how to listen well and to deeply surrender so that we can let ourselves be used as vessels of love in the world.
I'm thinking of the Dalai Lama who said, you've come to hear me today. Don't use what I say to become Buddhist. Use it to become a better whatever you are.
Yes, that's a great quote. I love that.
You do speak at religious freedom events, which you've done at the BYU Law School. What do you speak on, and what are you hoping to get people to think about there?
It was so much fun to come to BYU. I have to say, I fell in love with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and the people in it were amazingly hospitable and generous with their love and their care. And I came with a professor who's also on my board, and she's a member of your church. And she invited me and three other pastors from Little Rock to come talk about her decades-long study on how our faith affects our community, and how reaching out in the community does all kinds of good things for both congregations and the individual. It helps us to feel closer to God when we reach out in our community, because we end up seeing God in each other. And so it feels like God is very close. Do you agree with that? Have you had that experience?
Yes, very much so. And tell me the name of this person on your board.
Her name is Dr. Rebecca Glazier, and she wrote a book called Faith in Community. It's a decades-long study with multiple congregations, really good social science research. You know, she also says when we work in community, we feel better about our democracy, because if you can get out there and feed someone and work with someone, you think, oh, maybe I can affect our world. And then you're more likely to go vote, you know, go be out in the world in that way. It does all kinds of good things.
So how do you get an interfaith house and organization sponsored in a community? Is it grant writing? Who does sponsor it?
Well, I inherited 10 years of work from our founders, the Reverend Susan Sim-Smith, and who's Episcopal priest, and the visionary and first executive director, Sophia Saeed, who is a Muslim woman who started a mosque. She is amazing. She's a force for good in the world, too. And so we had some major donors that believed in us that have made multiple year contributions, but we've gotten some grants and we're trying to develop all that right now. So we're not funded by one particular congregation. This is just a lot of good people in the world saying, oh, this needs to happen. Let's make it happen. And we're renting this building from Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, and they're giving us a great deal. So it's very good for both of us.
What a delight to speak with you. I'd love to follow up as you get more into what your center is doing and accomplishing. What should I ask you I don't know to ask you?
You ask a question about how I got to where I am. And if there's people listening that are in a period of doubt or transition or not being sure, I would just encourage them to keep listening and being curious for the voice of God to show up, even if they don't know what they believe, because I really do think God is walking with us in the shade of the garden, asking us to come hang out.
Many thanks to the Reverend Patricia Matthews for speaking with me. This episode was produced by James Sturdivant. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Heidi Clough, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. You can check out more of our episodes and extended interviews on our YouTube channel. Connect with us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.
There is power in stories. They inspire us. They help us see ways we might try doing things. And sometimes a story will even tell us not to go down that particular path. And it's nice to learn that from a story or a conversation before you experience it yourself. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here from the In Good Faith podcast. I love stories because what they teach me about people, about God, about politics, about everything. And I hope you will check out the brand new podcast, Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There is so much to learn from the stories of these guests because they are people who found themselves in an uncomfortable moment. They could have just left the situation, written off the people they disagreed with, but instead they made something beautiful out of it. And you can learn how, and I know you'll like the stories. This is hosted by Julie Rose, the host of Top of Mind. She does a great job, and I know you'll love the guests and their stories. Check out Uncomfy.